Well, hello and welcome to What's Brewing CISFA. What's Brewing CISFA is a podcast produced for the California Community College's Student Financial Aid Administrators Association. I'm your host, Dennis Schrader. I serve as the 2020-2021 CISFA president.
And I'm Dana Yarbrough, Dennis's co-host and fellow employee at Los Angeles Mission College.
What's Brewing CISFA hopes to inform and entertain you 30 minutes at a time.
So let's start the show. And welcome to another episode of What's Brewing CISFA. Let's start this show with our first cup.
That's right, Dana. Make sure that if you don't have your cup full by start of the show, you go back and get a little somewhere midpoint.
Yeah, and then add a little something to it.
Well, you know, whatever you're doing, you know, again, this is an early morning show, so whether you're putting stuff in to raise your metabolism or even yourself out, I leave that to you and our listeners.
It's one of the things I'm going to miss when we go back to, you know, back to campus is the shenanigans, you know, you get away with.
Yeah, that's true.
With working from home.
Yeah, I have a feeling. I think if you did a little survey of people, as most people will, you know, head from work from home back to working on in the office, I bet there would be some reasonably, I'm going to say mid-teens percentage-wise, reasons why you want to continue to work from home. Will be about 10 to 12% of the reasoning, and it wouldn't be a sole reason, I hope, for most people. That shenanigans part, you know, Irishing up your coffee, as they say, or, you know, I mean, you know, they're, you know, midday nap and Kahlua or something. I mean, there's going to be, some percentage that's going to be a meaningful number, I think.
I agree with you,
you know,
and I will be in that percentage. Absolutely. 100.
That's true. Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the other things I think about that I'm a little concerned about as people do roll back to the office will be, one, your home cleanliness, you know, because you've been around at your house, or your people probably been cleaning their places a little more. And also I'm going to feel for the poor dogs and cats who are going to get neglected.
Yeah, they're going to be abandoned again.
So I wonder if, you know, employers will become... of course, with COVID, everyone wants to stay 800 feet apart. But I'm wondering if they'll get more relaxed in their pet policies. Because think about it. I'm sure there are plenty of people who have taken on cats and dogs. Now, cats, you don't want to bring to the office. They can stay at home all day. You know, cats are, you know, that's their lifestyle. But a dog, think about it. You know, I mean, if you've got a dog who's got to go out midday and you live kind of far away, what are you going to do? So I wonder.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see. I'm from the old school, so you just put them in the backyard.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
There you go.
You're like the, you know, we don't even call that neglect. That's just old school, people.
That's old school.
Yes.
You know, and it's so interesting because I have really good friends who are dog people, and some of the stories they tell me, like, it blows my mind because I did grow up, you know, with a lot of animals. We had birds, fishes, dogs, cats, all kind of, like I said, all kind of animals. And, but my dad, he's from Arkansas, everyone listening, and he grew up on a farm. So animals, they stay outside. None of this business about, you know, inside pets. So you just leave them in the backyard and with their little doghouse and some food.
Yeah, see, we didn't even have a dog house, but when we had a dog, and it was one until I was like a teenager when we lived in the south side of Milwaukee in the suburbs, it was, I forgot what he was, not an Irish setter. It was some kind of breed that was like really wiry kind of fur. But poor Tiger... I guess this is the story I was told. So the dog predates me by like a few years of birth. And apparently I was sitting, this must have been like before I was like 1 or 2 years old. I was sitting on the floor. The dog used to have the ability to roam around the house. Not a big house. And apparently at some point someone knocked on the door and the dog ran right over me.
Oh,
I don't have any scars as far as I know that okay. would go to that. So at that point, the dog basically became an outside dog mostly.
I see.
Okay. And when he was in the house, there was this little back foyer, you know, off the back door of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Probably like no bigger than like 8 feet by 8 feet. And then there was the stairs of the basement. And then it entered into the kitchen. So like a mud room without a lot of room other than the hang coats. That became his new place when he was in the house. Because they could put a gate on the kitchen. And the dog was too afraid to go down the stairs. So that was his indoor life, was this little 8x8 spot. And then he spent most of the day outside on either a concrete pad that we had mm-hmm. a little chain to that he'd walk in a circle by the garage, or some grassy area off to the side, again, where we had him chained up. Because to let him run wild in the yard, he would get out. Just one of those things.
That sucks. He chained him all up.
I know. I know. It sounds bad, but people, this was the 70s.
Yeah, that's old school.
Yeah,
that's
I had parents who did not know or seemingly care that we had a dog. And we didn't really play with the dog much.
Okay.
The biggest thing was really just cleaning up after him.
Oh, man.
Because if he literally had this dirt circle, you know, half of a circle, you know, burned into the yard. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he did his business out there, too. So you'd have to make sure that he, you know, was cleaned up once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't drag that around with him. And again, he, whatever kind of dog he was, not a very smart breed.
Oh, boy.
Completely untrainable. I don't think he was ever trained on anything. You know, sit, roll, stop. He just always seemed like he was antsy.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, because you guys had him chained up.
Yeah. Yeah, he was antsy to run away.
That's why.
Yeah.
You got to let them roam and be free and exercise them. And, you know, otherwise they'll, like you said, they'll get antsy, tear stuff up and do.
Yeah, that's why I'm sure he wasn't back allowed into the house, you know.
Yeah.
And then we had cats, you know, so. But yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, this is going to be interesting to work from home people. Are they going to all
right,
be like,
right. Uh-huh.
Can I bring my dog to the office?
I know. maybe, you know, if you tell admin that, you know, you, what's the term where you have an animal because you have a condition?
And well, there's the emotional support
animal. There we go. Yeah. Like
versus a service animal.
Yeah. Maybe like most emotional support.
Yeah. I wonder if you can get away with that because.
I wonder too. You know what?
You know, we had a memo on this, did we not? I think we had a memo on this because the faculty were asking questions. For students, and I think if I remember right, and I could be wrong, at least on our campus, a service animal always okay. Because obviously a service animal is sometimes used for people with visual impairments to get them around and all.
Mm-hmm.
So in the classroom, they're supposed to accept that those animals are trained appropriately, you know, not to act out, et cetera, et cetera. The emotional support animals, on the other hand, I believe, if I remember right, are not. We do not have to allow students in the classrooms with them and or I think in the offices. And these are animals that, again, support someone that, you know, based upon their current state of affairs in their head and all, need have, you know, a dog, a cat, a chicken, a mongoose. I mean, I guess there's a variety of animals that people have.
Yeah, they.
You know, because you'll hear about the story
yeah.
of the person getting on the plane with the emotional support duck or potbelly pig. I'm trying to think what was the craziest one. Not crazy, of course, but alligator? I don't know. Interesting.
Oh, wow.
At that point, I would say maybe emotional support alligator bag.
Oh, my word. I would think that that would elevate your anxiety, right?
I would
than,
too,
you know,
but apparently, you know, and I've certainly have seen, we definitely have had students on campus with emotional support animals. And again, you know, as long as they're well taken care of, it's been okay. So, Dana, when are you going to be bringing your emotional support dog to the office?
Oh man, we don't have any animals up in here. So we live in a townhouse. I mean, you can have up to two pets, and people do. They have dogs, they have wild birds, they have all kind of stuff. But like you're saying, like you mentioned your poor dog. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's really no proper area to keep a dog here.
Yes.
Even though, like, we do have little walkways, you can take them, but, like, I feel like dogs, they need, especially large dogs, and depending on what absolutely kind of they are, they need room to run. You got to exercise them. They're high maintenance. Dogs are high maintenance, man.
They can be. Yeah, that's when you move. If you move out and get a house, that's different, right? Yeah.
And even when you do have a house, because when my neighbor on the side, he trains dogs.
Okay.
His dog training. And so he'll tell me stories about different families that he helps out. And like, even if you do have a house, like they're a lot of work, and they're expensive too.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, I know friends who both spent a lot of money for a dog, mm-hmm. you know, 'cause they get these Ridgebacks and these,
even our
student workers.
Yeah.
Oh, that reminds me, you know, thinking of that. We should invite on one of our student workers who, you know who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Thought she had a corgi for how many? Forever.
If she's not too shy to come on.
I know, right? She is a shy one. But she thought she had a corgi based upon the way the dog looked. And I think they had adopted her or whatever many, many years ago. And then she did the doggy DNA test and found out her dog was a liar. Remember? Remember how upset she wasn't saddened as much as she was just upset that she'd been lied to by her dog. Because she would take her corgi to the corgi beach day or whatever. And then she finds out her dog has no corgi in him.
No, not whatsoever. That was just the funniest
thing.
It's a sad
thing. And you look at the dog and it looks like it could be a corgi mix of sorts.
Deceiving.
Yeah, I felt so sorry for her. And at the same time, it was just the funniest thing in the world.
Yes, it is. It was hilarious. So yeah, but don't get me wrong. I love dogs. I love animals. But man, if you're gonna get one, it's a lot of responsibility. And
oh, absolutely.
You gotta have your own little special account to make sure it's well taken care of.
Yeah, I mean the medical costs alone these days. Man, I mean, I have a friend with a few cats, works in financial aid, and again, she has spent more money on these cats and families of five or six kids have been spent on for doctor visits, you know, cancer treatments, pills, medications, therapy. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, Dana, we've talked a lot about pets today.
I know.
Maybe someday either one of us will have one again.
But I hope so. I hope I can afford and have the strength and the patience. I love huskies.
Yeah.
Okay. Love them. But man, oh man. And I'm addicted to husky videos too. But they're, now you want to talk about high maintenance.
Yeah, that looks like a dog that will tell you every 10 minutes, hey, let's go for a run.
Man.
Let's go outside.
If those of you listening, if you have a husky, email me. Email us and let me know your stories.
And send pictures of your dogs.
Yes.
So Dana can see them.
Yes,
All right, Dana. Let's do a little music and then let's get into the meat of the show today.
And we're back for our second cup on the What's Brewing CISFA show.
Time to fill up and get into the meat of something related to financial aid today.
Other than
the fact that we're going to have an office full of pets or something, I guess. So I thought we'd talk today, Dana, about scholarships.
Yes.
Not just because, you know, they're an important topic, but because, of course, you are the queen of scholarships at LA Mission College. You've been our scholarship coordinator now for a long time, right?
Oh, yeah.
We gave it to you pretty much as soon after we got you in, right?
Right. So maybe like, what, six years, I think?
Yeah, at least. Yeah. And I know this because I would look back at my office budget and know the big take that Dana needs from the budget to run her elaborate
ceremony.
Oh, yeah. Scholarship ceremony. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. You gotta empty your pockets and, you know, do my presentation to the foundation. Yes.
That's right. Exactly. Every year asking for more money to have a more elaborate ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought we'd go right from the start. And again, we don't have to spend a ton of time on any one of these. You know, we've got a good 10, 15 minutes here. But, you know, what are scholarships in general? You know, we know them to be basically it's free money,
mm-hmm.
similar to grants.
Mm-hmm.
And again, how you qualify kind of depends upon the type of scholarship you're applying for. But I think they kind of fall in like two main categories. There's like the merit scholarships. You know, based upon your academics, maybe your athletic ability, musical ability. So it's based on some kind of merit-based program. And then there's mm-hmm. need-based scholarships. I would say that at our school, at least, we have a little of both, right?
Right.
And we definitely
have a fairly good mixture. Yes.
Yeah. You know, there may be other ones that are like special qualifications, like, you know, ones for people of a certain background, like you're an Irish American ancestry, or maybe Native American scholarships that come from the tribe, for specifically students of family members of the tribe. But that's kind of your breakdown on scholarships. Now, the big question some students, and I get this from parents, is why apply? You know, we're not going to qualify. Mm-hmm. There's going to be 1,000 people applying. You know, what are my odds? But I think, you know, the whole thing, I think it's like just like with anything. If you don't apply, well, you know, you're not going to have a chance.
Right. It's a missed opportunity. Absolutely.
Exactly. And this is something I think we have to continually drill into the heads of our students at our school.
Oh,
again,
yes.
When they ask about scholarships, they have to apply. Now, how they apply may vary quite a bit because there are certainly, like we've got it kind of pretty centralized. You've done a great job with this in getting our foundation on board and all the faculty and staff. That we do one application one time a year
mm-hmm.
for a majority of the scholarships that come through campus.
Right. So it's our cycle. We call it our scholarship cycle.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it's a cycle, and that's how they apply. It's one form. Now, certainly we have students who get scholarships from outside organizations.
Oh, yes.
So how to apply? Sometimes you have to look out there to the real world. High school students might have it better than students who've been our non-traditional students who've been out there in the real world for a while and might not know where to look, but high school students start with their high school counselors and information they can get from there. You know, they'll have resources online. We have a number of free scholarship search sites out there. I assume you refer students to those occasionally, right?
Yes, because we do. We do have students who, like you're saying, they'll have questions. You know, Dana, you know, where can I go? So I will direct them to our scholarship webpage. And yes, mm-hmm. we do have several scholarship search engines.
Yes.
We have there, like, you know, the hyperlinks to those pages. And some of them are really savvy where they will search on, they'll do their own research and find out about other scholarships that they'll apply for and they'll get. And then we have like the, you know, those larger national ones that students are really good at applying for too.
Yeah, I think the one thing that for parents and students and everyone we have to always discern between is there are websites like scholarships.com.
Oh,
and fastweb.com. Those are
predatory ones, yeah.
Well, those aren't, but I mean these are the free scholarship search sites, right?
You wouldn't consider those more predatory?
No.
Don't they charge you a fee?
No, not these. Fastweb has probably been around the longest of all.
I'm sorry.
Even scholarships.com.
I'm sorry. I misheard.
No problem. No problem. That's not oh my God, now we're gonna get sued. Thanks. Thanks, Dana. No, we would never mention a predatory one out loud.
Save, Dennis. What are you doing?
No. Like, and again, there's a number of them. Sally Mae still sponsors one. I think they call it College Answer or College Answers. But these are the free scholarship search sites.
Yeah.
So that's different than, a particular scholarship. So if you go to a website, like I'm going to throw FastWeb out there, not because we're making any money off of them.
But they're like the most popular one.
Yeah, and they've been around the longest. Very long time. You know? Again, they, in a sense, what you do is you put in information about your demographics. Your, you know, if you're out of high school, maybe it'll be your high school GPA, ACT, SAT scores, background, maybe ethnicity, because you never know. And all that information goes into their computer system, and based upon that, it will tell you, based upon their catalog of known scholarships to the organization, whether or not you may qualify for them. And then you go out and actually apply. Which, again, you know, it's just a search. It doesn't do all the legwork for you, but it does save you the time. Because, Dana, you're not as old as me. But back before the days of the internet, so this would have been when you were just a teeny tiny baby, getting scholarships was a little harder.
Yes, you know? Like the search process, yeah.
Yes, I mean, you had to really know people or connect with people. Networking was so much more important in that way versus this social media networking, which I know most people don't use it to the same degree.
But didn't you guys, did you guys have like catalogs or now, leaflets or,
Now, that was the one thing. There was, and again, they're still out there and available, and they're not that expensive. It's those really thick, like 3-inch, printed on almost newspaper kind of guides from Peterson's or like U.S. News and World Report. If you go to a bookstore, either your local bookstore or Barnes & Noble, and you go to the education / reference area where you'd find stuff like books on colleges, ACT, SAT test prep and all that, you'd find these gigantic guides for scholarships. And again, they were still, and they're still pretty reasonably priced, under $30. But that was kind of the only choice if you wanted to find out about national type scholarships.
Absolutely. And then I remember when I was in high school, a friend and a good friend of mine, we would just frequent the, you know, the college office.
Yes. Yes, you would have to go to the financial aid office or whatever, or the sometimes through the admissions office to find out about what's available. I think that's a key that a lot of people forget about. Now, not so much with us community colleges, except for those that might have more of a one-stop shop mentality for how they work. Your admissions offices at your four-year schools would know about, and of course, when they're recruiting for students, whether they be incoming freshmen or transfer students, would have the information on the school's scholarships specifically for those types of students, right?
Right.
So I'm sure back in your APU days when they're, you know, stealing you away from LA Mission at some point after you spent your early years with us, they probably would have told you about, oh, these are the incoming transfer scholarships, right? So, you know, it's that's step one. You know, definitely check with your school on what's available out there. You don't want to miss out.
Yes. Yes.
Because Dana, why?
Because they get that information.
You know, does it really matter if it's only like a $100 scholarship?
Oh, man.
Come on.
I don't know if I should tell this story, but I am going to tell it anyway. All right.
I want to hear
it. Everyone listening, a couple of scholarship cycles ago, I want to say maybe the 1920 cycle.
All right.
We had a student win a scholarship. It was for $100. And at the time, it wasn't advertised that it was only $100. So when she came to the counter to collect or get, you know, get instructions on how to collect, when I told her it was $100, she scoffed at me.
Really?
Scoffed at me. She, $100? What am I going to do with $100? I keep it.
Wow.
So, yeah, she like basically.
Wow.
She was mad that it was $100. Told us that we could just keep that money. Dennis, no joke. This is a true story, everyone listening. And Dennis, when COVID hit, when we went into the, I want to say the fall semester last year, she contacted us and asked about that scholarship. And, you know, thank God we were able to find funds to give it to her. But yeah, so to answer your question, every bit counts.
Yes. I don't understand that either. And it's one of those things I sometimes hear from. And again, whether you are low, middle, upper or upper class or whatever, got to remember, and this is the thing I get to try to get across as parents and students, $100 here, $100 there, $500 here. It adds up. Uh-huh. And even at $100, what does that mean? If you just think of it in pure economics terms, at the $100, you as a student do not need to come up with from your savings.
I was just going to say that.
From your work.
Absolutely.
Get from your parents who would have to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
Or beg and borrow. Or take a student loan. Right? I mean, think about
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
$500 of scholarships is $500 less in loan plus interest.
Man, and then, you know, you mentioned something good is, okay, it's $100. Put it in your savings. Yeah,
exactly.
For when you, okay, you know, you got it here at the community college level, put it in your savings and, like you said, let it build interest if you have one of those type of accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way you have a little something-something when you transfer or exactly. when you're in emergency or yeah. when a pandemic hits.
Yes, exactly. You for know? When, yeah, when the something hits the fan, you have a little backup.
Yeah, and again, absolutely.
Especially for students nowadays who might be thinking, our students at least, community college. Then I transfer to a university. It could be a Cal State, affordable. A UC, still somewhat affordable. Or a private school, high cost. I'll have some extra money for that. And again, you know, it's not every dollar does count, people. That's why, what's the worst case? Just like in filling out the FAFSA, why do it? My parents earn too much money. How do you know that? You know, because you're driving around mm-hmm. in Rolls Royce. Okay, yes, your parents earn a lot of money.
That's, yeah, that's a different story. But let's find some other resources for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Every little yeah. resource counts. And again, mm-hmm. it means less money you have to borrow or find elsewhere. But yeah, that's just one of those ongoing myths of financial aid, or you know, we're a high income, we're not going to get it. Again, it mm-hmm. depends upon the type of scholarship. Merit scholarships, you know, like National Merit Finalist, or so many others that are looking for high GPA and such. Again, based upon merit, and it doesn't not looking at income. Whereas need based scholarships, yes, their need will be taken into account. Wow, Dana, we've talked so much on this. Let's just talk briefly on stuff that might be more related to our actual financial aid brethren out there, the processing part. Now, I know we've talked a little bit internally about scholarship management software because mm-hmm. we kind of almost have a system in the district that's paid for us that will get set up. But it's one of those things that even if you don't have software, you know this because this is what you do. You have a whole process. You have a workflow to everything you do because, again, you've taken applications, but then you have to divvy them up to all the different committees.
Oh, yeah, that whole process. So you want to know what we do, Dennis?
Yeah. Run me down in like a minute.
Okay. I'll do even one better. We'll just do it in steps.
Sure.
Step one, yes, receive the application. Step two, like you said, you know, review them. Like you just review them to make sure they even qualify
yes.
to apply. Yes.
Yes, you do have to.
And
do that.
And if they do, then like you said, the way we process them is we add their unofficial transcript,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we rate them,
mm-hmm.
you know, based on the criteria of the scholarship, and then we prepare them and you know send them digitally to the committees.
That's
securely,
right.
Securely, of course.
Now, I'm going to throw in there just because of where we're in time-wise. I remember the days, and I know you were like this too, before the digital craze, when I worked at a mm-hmm. University of Missouri. Again, same idea, scholarships all from one book, probably a
all
lot
paper,
more.
All paper, right?
They would literally, and every scholarship had a number, like 1 mm-hmm. through 99. So if a student circled 20 of them, someone would take that app and make
yes.
20 copies.
Yes.
And then when it was finally time for sorting, they literally had little tape post-it notes all the way around all the walkways of the financial aid office.
Wow.
They would do this like on a Friday afternoon, and they would literally give the student workers the stack, and you'd see on the front all the numbers circled, and they would start mm-hmm. throwing the apps down on the numbers.
Yep.
And then once you've gone through all, like, say, 300 students, mm-hmm. then they would have the stack all on that number, which was the whatever Dolores Goodwin Kearns Scholarship for Economics. And then that stack would go off to the committee.
That committee.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ah. So I actually, we and did a similar something. Process when I was a student worker in the
yeah,
office.
I bet we did.
Yes. Uh-huh. And I remember, like you said, making all those copies and then disseminating, you know, literally taking them physically
yeah.
to the different instructors or admin whoever was the chair of the committee. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we're definitely, I think because of where we are today in the show, I think we're going to have a part two on this and maybe okay. bring in some people from other colleges that have got this process down. Not only that, yeah. one of the things that you forget about, and we're not going to have time to talk today here, is the legalities of putting out scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right? Yeah. So we're going to try to get this woman, Desiree, who works at one of our local colleges here in Southern California, who's presented many times at our CSFA conference, the CASFA conference, and other training about how to make sure your scholarships are towing the line appropriately and you're not breaking federal law. Because, you know, it's easy to say, well, I just want to offer a scholarship to X, Y, and Z. But maybe that's a discriminating class, you know. Got to remember, there's federal and state rules on you can't discriminate on age and gender and sexual orientation and marital status, right? We've had to, unfortunately, there's a conversation with some of our donors.
Yeah, because, well, like you said, we got to make sure that we don't infringe on the protected classes.
Correct,
yeah.
correct. Mm-hmm. So we'll definitely get more into that. But until then, let's do a little music and slide ourselves into a quick little last sip segment. And just like that, Dana, we are ready for our last sips. So, Dana, it's that time. Any I Dare You To selections for anyone today?
Not today. How Not about today. For yourself?
I'll do a real quick one related to our subject. A book that I'd bought, because, again, I like to buy lots of books about higher ed. This one was, it's not too old, still applicable. Confessions of a Scholarship Winner. The Secrets That Helped Me Win $500,000 in Free Money for College. How You Can Too by Christina Ellis. So she went to Vanderbilt, majored in Human and Organizational Development and Business Planning and Entrepreneurship. Sounds like a lot of stuff. But she wrote this nice little book, very easy to read, paperback. It's just one of the many books out there about scholarships I'll put out there for people. Other than that, Dana, our big announcement, we have a great interview coming up on Friday. Anna Faye, of all people, is coming back for her third time.
It's going to be, just be ready, everybody listening. Yes. Just be ready.
So we're going to talk all things CSFA, planning for next year, re-engagement, and whatever other topics we can surprise her with. As she would say. So, Dana, that's all we have time for today. But, of course, there's always our next episode. So I want to thank my co-host, Dana, for joining us today on What's Brewing CSFA. And thank you, our audience, for tuning in.
And, everyone, if you have something to say or you have topics you want us to discuss, email us at wbcsfa@gmail.com.
Find this and all What's Brewing CSFA podcasts on Google Podcasts or your Apple Podcasts app, or, of course, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, and the TuneIn app on your Amazon Echo by using Alexa.
What's Brewing CSFA is a production of Studio 1051, a creative collaboration of Dennis and me.
This has been episode number 87, recorded the morning of Tuesday, May 4th, 2021. Have a great day, everyone.
And may the 4th be with you.
Yes.